Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, at Our Common Ground with my co-host, Alpha of the Alpha Show. Single black mothers bringing black boys to manhood. The challenges and the dilemmas. Our guest tonight, Dr. Raymond Wimbush of Morgan State University, Director of the Institute for Urban Research. Author of The Warrior Method. In our second hour, we'll be joined by Ms. Goldie Taylor, the author of The Goldie Taylor Project, which included last week a very interesting and popular commentary on the long allegations and complaints entitled A Not-So-Superhero, The Rise and Fall of Eddie Long. You're listening to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, and along with Alpha, I'll be listening for you.
Good evening to everyone out in the Our Common Ground audience. I'm Janice Graham. And good evening to you, Alpha. How are you?
Good evening, Janice. I'm doing just great. How are you this evening?
That's terrific. How's the weather in Chicago?
Rainy, wet, cold.
Well, it sounds like you have the other set of our twins. Tonight at Our Common Ground, we're going to be talking about black boys and single mother parenting and manhood training, how they face the dilemma and the challenges of bringing male models and programming and helping their sons come into manhood. And our first guest this evening, Alpha, is Dr. Raymond Wimbush. He's a clinical psychologist and director of the Warrior Institute, and he is engaged in research concerning adolescent development, education, health, and black men and boys. He is the author of the critically acclaimed book, The Warrior Method, A Parent's Guide to Rearing Healthy Black Boys, and also Should America Pay? And one of my favorite Wimbush books is Belinda's Petition, a woman that I felt in love with the character of that book. And in 2007, Dr. Wimbush traveled to Australia to participate in a five-day national conference on racism held at Murdoch University and delivered a lecture series at Australian National University. He conducts workshops based on the Warrior Method locally, nationally, and internationally. And the Warrior Method has been incorporated in school systems in Baltimore, Maryland, Worcester, Massachusetts, Dallas, Texas, Brixton in the United Kingdom, and Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. And Alpha, I was really proud to be a friend and kind of like a handholder of Dr. Wimbush as he wrote this book as well as Should America Pay? Thank you all for being with us, and I hope that we can bring you continue to bring you the kind of programming that we need. And I am posting in our chat room and invite all of you who are listening to come into our chat room. We have quite a vigorous conversation about the program's topics going on in our chat room that I think that most of our listeners would enjoy. Alpha, this is what we're going to do in the first half. As you know, we pretty much programmed this show around last week's program when we were talking about the allegations against Reverend Eddie Long at the New Birth Missionary Baptist Church. And one of the questions and major part, core of that show in the discussion was, how do single black mothers face all of the challenges that they have to face as a single parent in raising black boys and ensuring that they come to a well-developed, healthy-developed manhood. And one of the things that I thought that we should do is kind of recap what that was all about. And for our audience in the second hour, joining us will be Miss Goldie Taylor, who is the Managing Director and Chief Creative Officer of Atlanta-based Goldie Taylor Advertising and Public Relations. And last week in her Goldie Taylor Project blog, she wrote a very provocative, very insightful blog entitled A Not-So-Superhero, The Rise and Fall of Eddie Long. And we're going to be talking with her about that. She's a best-selling author. She's the author of In My Father's House, The January Girl, and she's currently working on her third novel, The Lives of Others, and The Devil and Missouri Daniel, a family memoir. Both of our guests tonight, which I am really, really proud to say, because I think that it brings a whole nother dimension of insight into the discussion, are single parents. And I hope that you will join us in this discussion, because we are really looking at coming to some solutions. Because while we can't throw, you know, also there are a lot of people who, in the light of these recent allegations and scandal around Reverend Eddie Long and New Birth Baptist Church, one of the things that we have to think about is that that was an institution that was a center of community resources for African Americans in Atlanta. And we certainly can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. But we do have to find a way in which black boys are safe. One of the astounding parts of this puzzle is that the sexual abuse of boys is a crime that is often ignored and underreported. And there are a number of resources for adult male survivors of abuse, and some of these are in churches. And we certainly cannot throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's what I'm saying. We have to come up with a way in which we can help parents and help our children to recognize the signs of sexual predatory behavior, as well as all other kinds of signs about when adults are behaving inappropriately and when they should tell. Because one of the things that we talked about last week was that our churches are just havens of secrets, secrets that are unhealthy. And we're going to be talking about how children are groomed for sexual molestation tonight. And in our audience is Denise Bowl. She's an MSW parent educator and author of Raising Princes to Be Kings, The Single Black Mother's Guide to Raising Her Black Son. And we're going to be asking Denise in the second hour to come in and give us some of the information that we need to keep our boys safe. Now, before we begin our discussion and before we bring on Dr. Wimbush, one of the things I'd like to do is to go to a little feature that I put together so that it kind of puts all of the dots in a row, Alpha. Got that? It connects the dots for us. So let's take a look at what brings us to the need, the absolute necessity to have these conversations, honest, significant, and in-depth discussions about keeping boys safe and helping black single mothers bring their sons to manhood.
Attention, attention. This is your leader, Satan. and I am requiring all regional principalities to report to my chambers immediately. I am receiving distress signals from the earth. Apparently, someone is attempting to bring heaven into the earth realm. Again, all principalities, regional demons report to my chambers immediately.
All present, sire.
I want regional reports beginning with Atlanta. Speak now.
Yes, master. Atlanta regional principality present. We have great gains in the Atlanta region. Religion is taking over where spirituality once reigned, and we're doing great things. Leadership all over the Atlanta region is segmented and divided, and people are not working together.
Excellent.
But there is one trouble area in the Atlanta region.
Yes,
that church in Lithonia. They continue to fight against me. And now they've assembled a team, a hideous team, to cover the youth.
What are you saying?
Sire, they've acquired Darius Wise, a.k.a. D. Wise. He is the senior director. He is skilled in team building. He is anointed, and he is a man of integrity. But not only that, they now have acquired Edward Long, a.k.a. the leader of the new school. And he, sir, is in charge of the junior and senior high. And he's a rapper. And he's sanctified. And he wears Jordans. And if that's not enough, they've acquired John Gray, a.k.a. the wild card. And he's in charge of the RSM Arts Department. And he has the children of New Birth dancing and singing and shouting and stepping, and they're acting and they're doing horrible, horrible things, and they're beating me up and down the block. I cannot take it.
You have failed. Who is the leader of this team?
It is none other than the one who always gives us heaven, and I am sick of him. It is he. Bishop Eddie L. Long, a.k.a. The One. And he has assembled this team, and they were excellent on their own, master. But together, they cannot be stopped.
I am sending all available demons who are not assigned to a territory to assist you. You must destroy that team. You must destroy that territory. Divide the leadership. Get those children. I want them back in my hands with no excuses. Do you understand?
Yes, sire. Yes, sire.
Then out of my face. You have work to do.
April. Connect me with Darius Wise, John Gray, and Edward, my son, immediately.
So what's up, man? How you doing on the yard?
Good, man. You safe, dude?
You repping?
Yeah.
You
sure? Yeah.
You repping for Christ? You ain't down there playing?
Yeah.
How many parties you done hit?
I ain't hit nothing, bro.
No party?
No party.
You playing?
No, I'm dead too.
So you wasn't at that set show last week?
No.
All right, now. Nah. Hold on. Snap this headquarters. Yes, sir.
You know, I just got the iPhone, man. So, you know, let's say we get your iPhone, too, you know what I'm saying? So when we in service, you know, we can text back and forth and talk, you know what I'm saying, really get into that world. Oh, man, this is the mothership. Hold on 1 second, folks. Hello?
Hey, you guys. Listen, I got an urgent revelation. I was in my prayer room, and God dropped something on me that's urgent. I need you here at headquarters right now. Right now, I need you here at headquarters. No excuses, hey, and put your armor on. Got to have you here, all right? See you in a moment.
I'm on my way.
Yes, sir.
Count me in. All right.
We got to ride.
Yo, we got to ride out real quick, man.
Gentlemen, I appreciate your immediate response to headquarters. Thank you for wearing your armor. I want to let you know, I was in my prayer room this morning and I got a serious revelation. It was actually an intercepted message from hell. God allowed me to hear it. Our children, our youth are under attack. And what he's trying to do is distract them. And the way they're trying to distract them is divide you. I am empowering you as your pastor to go forth and kill the enemy, save our youth, and get them into destiny. God has raised up and bought for us a wonderful generation. But you don't have to kill them. If you distract them, you'll keep them from destiny. And then if he divides and conquer, a house divided against itself will not stand. I am charging you. Put the house together. Put our kids in order. Allow them to grow to be true men and women, to walk as God has ordained. This attack will not succeed, and you must win, and you got the victory. Let's pull it together.
Spirit of hip hop. It's a lifestyle. It's something you never experienced before. We've witnessed thousands of people give their life to Christ. For the first time ever, it's hip hop bringing the spirit of Jesus and making him relevant to a hip hop community. So often we take life for granted, not really realizing that we have destiny and we have purpose. Join Bishop Long, the Spirit of Hip Hop, and Coco Brother in Atlanta, Georgia, as he speaks on valuable destiny on your moment of power.
You should be jacked up, but because you're my kid, I'm not gonna let you end in ruin. I'm gonna catch you before you hit bottom. I'm gonna hold you with my hand and lift you back up. You need to stop this crazy stuff.
Today, and the reason why society is like it is because men are being feminized and women are becoming masculine. And everybody knows it's dangerous to enter and exit. You cannot say, I was born this way. I don't care what scientists say. You can be converted. You were not born that way. Let me pray with you. Let me tell you, don't you be conformed to this world, but be ye transformed. Well, I don't know what I am. Charlie, take your clothes down and I'll show you who you are.
They were members of the church, very close to Bishop Eddie Long, and according to lawsuits filed this afternoon here in the state of Georgia, essentially what they accused the bishop of, according to this lawsuit, is using coercion and manipulation to engage these young men into sexual acts, including oral sex as well. So.
His presence alone is seduction to a young man without a father. You look at him and he's everything you want to be. He's everything you see and you dream to be. And being around him, it's almost like a drug. You can't believe the place that you're at in your life and the things that you're doing and the cars that you're driving and the people that you're meeting. So it becomes, if I want to continue to feel this love and this power, I'll do whatever my dad wants me to. I can't accept in my mind that he never was a dad to me. So I love him for that. But at the same time, for what he did to me and taught me and how I see the world, I'll never be able to forgive him for that. You're afraid to lose your father. You're afraid that if you tell him no, the support that he gives to yourself, the support that he gives to your family, and the support that he gives to you mentally, and the fact that you finally have a father that you've always wanted for and always dreamed of, would just walk away from you if you don't give him what you want. So you end up turning into something you never thought you'd be, which is now a slave to a man that you love. If you look at us in our eyes and you hear the pain in our voice, we don't have a reason to lie to this man. I love him, and I'm always going to have love for the things that he taught me. But how he left us hurt worse than anything I ever felt in my life. So while the media and the press and the rest of the people around the city or around the country look at us like, how can a grown man let another man touch him? What you have to understand is this man manipulated us from childhood. This was our father, and we loved him. This man turned his back on us when he had no more need for us. That's not a father. That's a predator. We would have to be the craziest kids in the world to want to come out and admit another man touching on us publicly. To really believe this is about money would be absolutely ludicrous. I cannot get the sound of his voice out of my head. And I cannot forget the smell of his cologne. And I cannot forget the way that he made me cry many nights when I drove in his cars on the way home, not able to take enough showers to wipe the smell of him off of my body. But that man cannot look me in my eye and tell me we did not live this pain. While you can sit in front of the church and tell them that you categorically deny it, you can't say that to our face. And you know this. You are not a man. You are a monster.
This is Our Common Ground. We'll be right back.
And that is pretty much the summary of where we come to the question of how do we bring our boys safely across when they live in single-parent homes and they crave and need male loving, nurturing, education, and training. Dr. Raymond Wimbush, thank you so much for being at Our Common Ground again.
How you doing,
good
BJ?
Evening. I'm doing pretty good, my brother. I am doing pretty good. You know, one of the things that has saved me from being absolutely crazy in looking at over the last 2 weeks these allegations is that you and other scholars have been doing the work, have been looking at this issue for a long time, and that there are solutions despite this misbehavior and despite the kind of manipulation and pimping that has been going on around the whole issue of black male training. What's your impression, Dr. Wimbush?
Well, you know, I was listening. That's a very, very disturbing, that the tape that you played at the beginning is very, very disturbing. There's a, you know, an African proverb that says a camel never sees its own hump. And I always say that when the church, unfortunately, I was listening to that and then contrasting it going back 40 years ago, the Dr. King's message, and wondering how we got from then till now with this prosperity ministry and so forth. You know, the thing is that with regards to the absence of fathers in home, as a young man said, who I really truly believe is one of Eddie Long's victims, what he said is so accurate, is that taking advantage of a young black male at an early age, most of us would have done almost anything that one of our parents would have said. And I think that Long stepped into a vacuum of nurturance, of role modeling that these young men lacked. And he took advantage of them. He was a predator. And if you look at the whole MO of predators in general, they look at the weakness of the children. On a very simple level, it can be just, you know, toys and material things, and then, or food or shelter. And obviously Long had all of this stuff at his disposal, and so he took advantage of it. And I think those of us who do for real mentoring work with young black males, we have to be sensitive to the needs that they have, make sure that we don't take advantage of them. You know, and I can honestly say the manhood training programs that I've been involved with, and I've been not only the one that I do, but others around the world, I've never seen anything like what has happened in that church down in Atlanta. Never.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right when you say that he fits the perfect MO of
absolutely.
How you groom children for sexual misconduct and molestation. And one of the things that I'd like for you to talk to us about, and Alpha is co-hosting with me tonight, is the way in which he used young people's culture.
Right.
I mean, at the beginning of that clip, I put together, there is a promo for New Birth Missionary Baptist Church that looks like a Matrix movie. And so
right.
you heard the voices of, and it has images of him picking up, and they all have on the black long coats that they wear in the Matrix and the capes and all that stuff. And then you bring in the culture of hip-hop into it, and it's
right.
very tantalizing.
Well, it's like the suckers that, or the lollipops that predators give to children at playgrounds. That's something that children like. And the thing about it, see, this is a function in one sense of what I call this, you know, and I know I may step on some of your listeners, so, but this kind of mindless Christianity, and I prefer to call it mindless churchianity, that many of our black folk are being involved in. I was on the phone tonight with Frances Cress Welsing about another matter, and, you know, it's like Frances always says, she says that because of white supremacy, we have to be addicted to something. And many of us are addicted to religion. I didn't say God. I didn't say Jesus. I didn't say Allah. I said to religion. And
mm-hmm.
religion
mm-hmm.
is not necessarily those things that really transform a person. And I think that what Long has successfully done, like you said, BJ, he combines the things that are tantalizing the young people, hip-hop, clothing, movies, you know, like yeah, all of that stuff, jewelry, the bling, whatever you want to call it, and then he hands it, you know, to the young people, and they don't realize that at the core of all this stuff is this insidious poison of seduction, molestation. They don't see that, and they're not supposed to see it because they're children. You know,
mm-hmm.
we have to train our children to be more aware, but people like Long and people say, well, he hasn't been proven. Look, I'm a psychologist, and I know, and I can listen to young people, and I know when they've been molested. And that young man that you had on, as well as the other things that I've been reading, is clear that they've been molested.
Mm-hmm. It is very clear. It is very clear. Now, let me ask you a question about needs of young boys.
Yeah.
When you were doing your research for the Warrior Method, that one of the things that pierces through your work is that what boys need to be taught is collective interest.
Right.
And that is such an African concept,
yes.
that there is no king, there is no prince, that there is a community, and that is the collective interest. And that is what they have to work on, that family. And I'm wondering if Long and other predators of black boys, because I did some reading too, and there is a whole racial component to how pedophiles operate as well.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how we get our church community to understand that this authoritarian figure that they place on pedestal is very harmful in teaching children about, especially men, about power and authority.
Well, the thing is, BJ, is that many of these church-based programs simply are not African-centered. I didn't say all of them, but they're not African-centered. They put the emphasis on that individual rather than, as the Zulu Declaration says, I am because we are, and because we are, therefore I am. They put an emphasis on an individual. The church, as you've heard me say it before, the word pastor, you know, rhymes with master. And these men are they're like almost demigods. And I'm not just talking of the young men that were molested. I'm talking about the appeal to single black women. You know, I wrote a blog a few years ago to my white boyfriend, Jesus, when I heard that as I was autographing my book in line, when people, black women, many black women will say, you know, I don't need a man, I need Jesus. And what has happened is that many of these prosperity ministers have taken advantage of the problems within our culture, the incarceration of black men, the lack of father figures, and they use those weaknesses again to preach words that are tantalizing and what our people need. We need balance in our relationships. We need father figures. We need role models for mothers as well. And these folks, rather than trying to really deal with those issues, they turn the person away from that African consciousness and put it into a pastor-centered religion rather than a God-centered or a African-centered form of you know, manhood training. And so the end results of what you're seeing right now.
Now, there are many people, Dr. Wimbush, who are alluding to the idea that these mothers kind of turn control of their sons over to these programs, the Longfellow program, and that they tended to ignore some of the signs, but some of that has to do with the coercion process. You better not let your mother know. Don't act as though, and the lure of a fatherless child, a fatherless boy, having someone to call daddy or father, or be a son. So, are these churches now taking? Saying that, are the churches now dismissing the notion that in the black community, families have been through history led by the woman in the family? The mother has always been the head of the family because fathers had to be absent to work, or they had to be absent to get away from the law. They had to be absent because they had no money. Is the church taking advantage of that in this prosperity gospel, and was that one of Long's things?
Well, not only are the churches taking advantage of it, the churches, you know, you got to look at these churches like the one in Texas, and I'm not going to call any names, but everybody knows what I'm talking about. The one in,
not Potter.
Right. Oh, there you go. And I'm not, but what we're seeing is that there is instead of being in the faith business, they're in the business of faith, that these churches are really money-making machines. And we're seeing here in Baltimore some of the little small churches that really, if you look at something like Ebenezer 40 years ago in Atlanta, which is not that far from Eddie Long's church, those were the churches that pressed for social justice. I tell, you know, many of my students, I said, you need to measure a church not by how many people go there, not by how many people have car, if the pastor has car. You need to measure it by how committed they are to social justice. And I'm not talking about setting up a daycare program, although that's good, or setting up a drug treatment program, although that's good. I'm talking about dealing with human rights, civil rights, the way Jeremiah Wright does in Chicago, Willie Barrows in Chicago. What's his name out in California? Fred Price. He does it.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm not saying
nobody,
that all these ministries are bad, but I'm talking about
people in Boston.
Right.
I needed to add that.
Right. No, you're right. You're right. But see, a lot of these churches are really just vacuuming money up on Sunday morning and making a massive transfer of wealth out of our communities on Monday morning when they put all the money into the bank. And so I would not discourage at all black mothers, single black mothers, from sending their children you know, to manhood training programs. In fact, it's very much needed. But what I'm saying is that you should vet, you should do background checks, you should watch, you should talk to children and parents who have been in those programs, and do the same thing you would with a so-called secular manhood training program or an African-centered program. Pastors are not above being vetted. I noticed last Sunday how Long, you know, really parsed his words carefully, saying things like, I'm not perfect.
Yeah.
I'm going to fight these charges.
Well, he was clearly avoiding
surgery. He didn't say
charges.
I'm innocent. He said, I'm going to fight these charges. I've got stones like David. This stuff is, I mean, it's blasphemous almost. And it's destructive and all of these things. And so I think that moms and dads who want their children, and which is right, to be in these African-centered manhood training programs, they need to vet the pastor. They need to vet the people who are involved with them.
You're absolutely right. Alpha is my co-host, and I'm sure he's got some comments he wants to make and ask some questions of you as well, Ray Wimbush, and thank all of you for being with us here tonight at Our Common Ground. Alpha, what are you thinking about all of this?
Well, first of all, welcome, Dr. Wimbush, and it's my pleasure to speak with you, sir.
How you doing, brother?
I have a question, and you touched upon it a little bit when Pastor Long, when he was in front of his congregation and he began to address this, he started out by not denying it, but saying, I'm not a perfect man.
Right.
And to me, that was so telling. That spoke volumes to me. But my question to you would be this. How do you explain just the blind faith, the blind following of his congregation? And I said this in a earlier program today. The only difference between the congregation there in that church and the people who followed the Ayatollah into the grave, who were jumping in on top of in the grave, are that they were wearing black. Because it seems that the congregation is in such a mindset that regardless of what this man does, they're going to follow him. They'll follow him off a cliff.
Well, it's a form of mass hypnosis, and you're right. It's the Jim Jones idea that they've drunk the Kool-Aid. It's Adolf Hitler 70 years ago in Germany. And if you notice, with a lot of these kind of mass hypnosis movements have is that the people are really in need of something to fulfill their lives. Germany, for example, 80 years ago, they had been humiliated during World War I, so you see the rise of Hitler. Jim Jones, you know, in California took poor people. You know, when that happened 30 years ago, I lost one of my own students in that, and then she had needs, but so did the other people. And they said, well, let's move to, you know, South America, the Third Reich, or I think Eddie Long took these people, young men, to Africa and places like that. They know what I'm talking about. The predators know what they're doing, and the people who follow them, they are addicted to the chance of saying, I want my life to be better. I want to feel better than I feel right now. They're trying to inoculate themselves against the racism that they face every day, and they see people like Long as these strong, self-assured figures with driving Bentleys and Rolls and all of this stuff like this, and they say, I want to be like him. I want to, you know, I'll do anything that he says, and he can't be wrong. And I think that it's a form of mass hypnosis. Usually the person that is that's following is a megalomaniac, or they're delusional themselves. And I think that Eddie Long is delusional. And I think that many of these people who get involved, they're weak-minded people, and they need help. And this guy presents himself as the helper.
Well, I think you were spot on when you said that he was in the business, and how did you put it? He was in the business of
It's a business. The churches, these prosperity ministries are businesses first. The spiritual component is way down the line someplace. They're talking about how to make money off of Jesus. I mean, you should never trust a minister whose last name is Dollar. You know, you shouldn't. I mean, that just should say something to you right there. And I'm signifying,
absolutely,
but you know who I'm talking about. Because
well,
that shows
absolutely
what, and at least with somebody 30 years ago, some of you remember, rest his soul, Reverend Ike, he told people up front, I'm about money. These people try to sugarcoat it a little bit to make it appear that they're not about money, but that's where they're about. There was a church in Nashville when I was teaching at Fisk, and when you joined the church, you had to give to the minister the last 3 years of your income tax returns so they could determine how much money you should be giving to that church every week. You should run the other way if a minister ever says anything like that to you.
Well, there's another component to it, Ray, as well, and that is to the extent that 25,000 to 33,000 people who
yes
are underneath this ministry have been injured to the extent that they have lost all sense of rational thought
right
in supporting this man. The other question I have for you, and we're going to have to take a break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk to you about that, what happens to people in terms of their need for being addicted to celebrity and power and authority and behaving in sheep-like ways. And I'd also like to ask everyone to ponder for a minute if what happened with Bishop Eddie Long and his accusers is true, and I believe that it is, how will it affect these young men for the rest of their lives? And whether or not, and Dr. Wimbush, this is for you, where is the team that is going to intercede on behalf of the many children, including those that are bringing these complaints and have been victimized by this minister in this very large African-American community? Where is the intercession by professional people like you who know and what happens and what black boys need, and whether or not there's going to be some professional intervention and treatment? Because we know that if sexually abused boys are not treated professionally, they're most likely to commit crimes, commit suicide, abuse drugs, or become abusers themselves. With that, every one of us has to ask the question, how would we feel if it was our child? And we need to stop being fearful, and we need to move forward with the resources that we already have. You're listening to Our Common Ground, and my co-host tonight is Alpho. And when we come back, we'll talk more with Dr. Raymond Wimbush.
I was angry. I mean, I was angry as a black man. I was angry as a black father that I could imagine, you know, little Johnny, a black boy, falling and scraping his knee on the schoolyard and having a teacher that doesn't want to touch him. I mean, this is like a fundamental need that all children have, is to be comforted when they're hurt. So to have a teacher who says that and did say that, anonymously, of course, it struck me deeply as saying how much contempt young black boys are held in by some people who just simply don't want to teach them or touch them.
Thank you for choosing Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you.
Out plans.
Solutions. Taking action. The whole community stepping up.
Taking responsibility.
Beyond the statistics
are the real stories of the children.
Beyond the obstacles are the promises of the past.
Beyond the bricks.
Beyond the bricks
are the hopes of tomorrow.
I pledge to go beyond.
I pledge to change, starting with myself, the man in the mirror. I pledge to teach one. I pledge to inspire one. I pledge to help one so that that one may go to another one and spread that love. It's time to rise up and be responsible for ourselves. And I pledge to always go beyond.
I pledge to go beyond.
I pledge to go beyond.
Beyond.
I pledge to go beyond.
I pledge to go beyond.
What's your pledge?
This is Janice Graham of Our Common Ground. Please support the Beyond the Bricks Project. www.beyondthebricksproject.com. Speaking truth to power is not enough. We must get to the solutions. Be part of the solution. That is the power. Beyond the Bricks, October 9th, 2010, Morgan State University, Baltimore, Maryland. Pass the word. Learn more. www.beyondthebricksproject.com. Our Common Ground. Talk that matters. Speaking truth to power and ourselves. Thank you for being with us tonight. Tonight at Our Common Ground, we're talking with Dr. Raymond Winbush. He's the director of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University in Baltimore, Maryland, and he's the author of The Warrior Method. We've posted a link for you in our chat room for those of you who are chatting, and for those of you who are not, please do join us at blogtalkradio.com, OCG. And my co-host tonight is Alpha, and before we went to break, we were talking about where's the intervention? How are we going to repair the damage done, both to this church community, to the community at large, and to the confidence that parents have in programs that assist them, especially single mother parent homes that reach out to these kind of resources. Dr. Winbush, you want to speak to that?
Well, you know, if past is prologue, you know, we had a major scandal. I don't want to mention the minister's name here in Baltimore a couple of years ago. And if past,
I remember.
You know who I'm talking about. And
yep.
If past is prologue, what we find is that three things happen. First of all, the church usually splits into two groups. One who say, let's forgive pastor, let's continue to be brainwashed, and let's move on. The third or second group are those who say, forget pastor. He had a lot of responsibility. He abused it. We're going to hold him accountable, and we're out of the church. And then the third group is the group that I'm concerned about. If people say, I'm totally disillusioned with anything dealing with any aspect of faith communities. Those are the three groups. And with the unfortunate thing about all three of those groups is that rarely do they bring in people like myself and other psychologists and try to, you know, heal the church because they want somebody who's spiritual. I've actually asked, a group here actually asked me to come into a church that had gone through a major crisis, and the first thing they asked me was I a member of a church, and I told them I was not. And then they said, well, we don't want anybody to come in here that isn't a church member. Well, see, that's the problem, because with these, what the pastor oftentimes has done is say that any professional help, be it a teacher, a doctor, a lawyer, a dentist, has to pass this litmus test of being a church member in order for us to, you know, help them. So I'm not, to be honest with you, BJ, I'm not really that confident that they're going to bring any outside people into that church or any other church. If you
but
know
what about
of one,
the
let
health
me
know.
Department? You know,
what about
will,
the health department of the city of Atlanta?
Well, they could be involved, and hopefully there'll be some indictments. And I'm very serious.
Mm-hmm.
But see, you don't want to just bring in the police, but sometimes that's necessary. I mean, sometimes
mm-hmm.
these people need to be charged. And
well,
and
I was told by someone last week that what I should be doing is praying for the church. And what I said was, I'm praying for the IRS to do a proper investigation, and I'm praying that all these gifts and cars and guest houses and airplanes and trips were commingled with federal dollars, because I do know that New Birth has poverty to prosperity grant money over the
right.
last eight years, and that will be the federal indictment.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And it's terrible that, you know, those kind of people will come in and as opposed to people that can heal the church. See, like I said before, I think these churches, again, if you go back in time, you see people forget that Malcolm was a minister, but he took advantage of people who were outside. They didn't have to be a member of the Nation of Islam to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Minister Farrakhan does it right now. You know, I've been asked to do things for Minister Farrakhan. I'm not a member of the Nation of Islam. So I think that, but these prosperity ministers, it's almost like they want to keep all the money in the family.
Well,
they
it's
want to,
about secrets.
Exactly.
You can't
and
manipulate
they know that if
without
a clinical,
secrets.
Right. And if a clinical psychologist comes in there, a clinical social worker comes in there, that they're going to say wherever the trail takes us, we're going to follow it, and that's what they're afraid of.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that's been interesting in the news reporting of all of this that I noticed in the complaint, there are four names that
yep.
each one of the complainants names as people, adults, who knew that this behavior was going on, and they certainly didn't report it. And I don't see anybody talking about them. One of them was Daryl Thomas, the Atlanta attorney.
Yep. Well,
and we need to start calling these people's names out so that they know that in instances where children and people who cannot protect themselves are being victimized, there's no place to run and no place to hide.
Well, you're absolutely right. And in the state of Maryland, as in most states, if you know that a child is being abused and you fail to report it, you're considered an accessory. And again, we
absolutely.
Need to see with this, hopefully the good that will come out of this entire situation is that somebody will get indicted, that this will
mm-hmm.
not go unpunished,
mm-hmm.
that somebody will suffer for the crimes that they committed. And that should serve as an example to other churches that will try these
mm-hmm.
things, as well as other child predators.
Mm-hmm. Now, we only have a few more minutes in this segment with you, Dr. Wimbush. And one of the things I want you to cover is that for single-parent homes, and I heard from a single father who extracted he and his family out of the church because Reverend Long was having an inappropriate social contact with his 14-year-old son. That was from a male single parent. So,
well, he did the right thing, and that's a brave thing to do. I think
exactly.
a step further would have been then to report it to the police. I think what we've got to do is simply demystify, you know, and de-godify, if you please, these ministers. They're like many little tin gods that are standing up there, strutting around with bad toupees on and other things like this. I know I shouldn't have probably said that, but they need to be taken down a notch and say, look, this guy is a predator. He's a criminal. And unfortunately, as we said earlier, many of the congregation members are simply victims of mass hypnosis. Groupthink, if you please. They've drunk the Kool-Aid, and they see
past. Yeah, well, even our friend Jelani Cobb attended the service last Sunday morning, and he was writing notes, and he's a prominent scholar and professor at Spelman College, and the ushers ushered him out.
They did.
He was
article.
He was writing a note.
And Jelani's one of our most eminent scholars. But see, that's how bad it is in these churches. And see, this is – so people wonder, for example, how could Jim Jones lead 900 people down into Guyana back in 79 and have them kill themselves as well as commit suicide? These people are on the brink of doing that. They will die for pastor. And
yeah.
You see, and 25,000 – people in that church, in those services that they hold every day at down in Atlanta. I, as a psychologist, I know there's a potential suicide for at least 10 people down there. And we've got
mm-hmm.
But again, the church becomes insular. These ministers make these churches insular so that people from the outside, i.e. people like Jelani, myself, Joy Leary and others, that they can't penetrate these churches. Joy lives right down in Atlanta, the author of Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. And I doubt
mm-hmm.
very seriously if she will be asked to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. And Goldie Taylor, who's going to be our guest in the second hour tonight, she lives in the neighborhood.
See?
And the thing is that one of the things that we have to understand why this is so dangerous is that this model is being replicated in small churches and middle-sized churches all over this country.
Yes. The prosperity ministry has effectively replaced the social justice ministry in large urban communities. It is effectively
changed. Give me one thing.
Right,
one thing that every parent.
Going back even further to who's the founder of AME Church going back 200 years ago?
Richard Allen.
I mean, you see this kind of link going throughout history of dealing with social justice issues in our churches. And this is like gone are the days. I mean, just imagine right now if a T.D. Jakes and an Eddie Long and a Creflo Dollar got up together. I'm talking about in a press conference at the National Press Club and said publicly, we need jobs by the federal government. We denounce
mm-hmm.
The Tea Party's movement, white supremacy. Things would change overnight. That King did things like that with a church less than 10% of the size of Eddie Long's church. But these people
mm-hmm.
are more concerned about making money. I'm sorry.
They're not going to do it because they get a little bit of pinch of what all the other churches are doing so that they can keep. That was one of the reasons that President Obama did not abolish the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives, because churches like New Birth, churches like the Potter's House, Creflo Dollar's zillion-dollar operation going on, and all of these small churches getting $300,000 and $500,000 dollar grants out of faith-based initiatives at the word of Eddie Long, T.D. Jakes, and Creflo Dollar at the Bush White House. They're being silent because they know what trough they have to feed at.
Yeah, and very quickly before I leave, if you look back in the, remember Ralph Reed's Christian Coalition, there's a document that is very difficult to find, but it was called the Samaritan Project, and what the idea was in the early 90s to start targeting inner city black churches, which, as you know, are socially liberal on issues, but very conservative on issues of, like, I'm sorry, socially conservative on issues like
mm-hmm.
abortion, homosexuality, and so forth, but liberal on issues dealing with social justice. And they targeted these churches. So what you always see right before major elections since then, that you'll see, like, in Ohio in the 2004 presidential election, because they started talking about homosexuality, gay marriage, and all this stuff like this, that 4% of the black vote swung away from the Democrats to the Republicans. And I've heard black church members now say, I used to be a Democrat, but now I'm a Republican because I don't like the way the Democrats are liberal on these social issues. And see, that's exactly what the Samaritan Project was doing, was to start pouring money into the churches in terms of drug treatment programs, in terms of daycare centers, and then hook these churches into those kind of, quote, ministries, and then after that, have them vote Republican. And we're seeing so we know that Eddie Long is a Republican, and he is. And we know that, what's his name down there, that the first person that came with George Bush after Katrina was none other than T.D. Jakes, because they knew, Bush knew if he had gone to New Orleans by himself, that he probably would have gotten beat up. But when they saw T.D. Jakes with him, they knew that he would kind of calm the waters and
stuff like this.
But this was a deliberate program, and we see the effect of it right now.
And you see it in every major city across the country.
Actually.
Now, Dr. Wimbush, I know that you are a well-experienced single parent, and I remember your son going through high school.
Yeah, for Roger.
What is the best thing for a black parent to do to keep a black boy safe?
You have to be, I made sure I always knew where my children were all the time. I made sure that I knew that my son was safe. I made sure that he had curfew hours. I didn't care if my child was mad at me sometimes because he thought I was too strict. They thank me for it now. But then, we have to get out of as I tell people, we have to get out of the habit of saying I'm going to be a buddy or a friend to my child. We got to be parents to our children. And parents mean to protect your children, to make sure that they're safe. When I grew up, as you know, BJ, as most of us when we grew up, my parents would not let me spend the night over anybody's house unless my parents had talked to their parents. Now I find parents, I've asked this in front of crowds, do you have a working relationship with all of the parents that your children hang out, parents' children hang out? And many of them don't. We've got to get to know the parents so that we can pose a common front, that we rebuild that village that is so often quoted in that proverb about taking a village to raise a child, and actually create that village by getting to know parents so that they can help govern our children when they are not in our presence.
Well, I think that that's an order, that it is a Sankofa moment, that we need to go back to some very, very basic principles about parenting. And one of them is to be honest and upfront about the realities in which children, the environment in which children live. And perhaps inappropriate relationships with adults, and that's for girls and boys.
And boys.
Inappropriate relationships with adults needs to be taught when they are toddlers.
That's right. That's exactly right. And this is what I try to do in Warrior Method, which is really an organizing model for the family, is to make sure that boys and girls are protected. I'm glad you mentioned the Beyond the Bricks movement next weekend, in which we're going to try to organize, as 9 other cities are, an entire community, get the policymakers, the teachers, the girls, the boys, everybody and parents in the same room to try to create a cocoon around those children to make sure that they get proper education. And that's another indicator of whether or not somebody is on target, is when they do draw from the resources of communities, both inside these churches as well as outside of the churches.
Well, Dr. Wimbush, it's been a pleasure to have you back at our common ground.
Well,
and we want to do a show just about Beyond the Bricks Project, because
anytime,
I think it's important. I think we're going to be running the promos on it tonight, and I'm going to be blogging or whatever I call myself doing on Facebook when I write notes. I'll write notes tomorrow about Beyond the Bricks, and we wish Morgan a great success with this initiative, and I hope to see it in Boston, but the 10-Point Coalition is the place you ought to call.
Okay. We'll do
Thanks,
that, okay?
Ray.
Thank you very much.
It's been such a pleasure. That
Thank
was
you.
Dr.
Thank you.
Raymond Wimbush, and I have given you a link, but if you would like, you can go to iur.morgan.edu and find out about the Beyond the Bricks project, or www.beyondthebricks. Coming up for us in the second hour is a visit with Goldie Taylor. Goldie Taylor has been writing a lot lately on this issue about boys and children, sexual predators. She is the managing director and chief creative officer of Atlanta-based Goldie Taylor Advertising and Public Relations. She is the author of A Woman's Worth, an essay featured on her blog, The Goldie Taylor Project, and ebonyjet.com, that gained some national attention during the 2008 presidential election cycle. She's been featured in Marie Claire, Black Enterprise, and Jezebel magazine. She's been a guest columnist for the Atlanta Journal, the Atlanta Tribune, the Atlanta Voice, Ebony Magazine, and Creative Loafing. She's a best-selling author, and I started reading her books on yesterday. She is the author of In My Father's House, The January Girl, and she's currently working on her third novel. She's a mother of five children. When we come back, we'll be joined by Goldie Taylor. And we thank you for being with us, and we'll take your calls in this second hour. So you stay with us, won't you? I'm Janice Graham, and he is... Who are you?
You're listening to Our Common Ground, Saturday night open mic with my co-host, Alpho of The Alpho Show. Please check out our other broadcast products at TruthWorks Network. TruthWorks Network is the Black University on the air at Blog Talk Radio. We provide the best of ideas, explanations, exploration, scholarship, and speeches, interviews, and audio documentaries. TruthWorks Network and Our Common Ground. We know what to do with radio.
And we thank all of you for being here with us. I'm going to see if I've got Goldie Taylor on the line here at Our Common Ground. Goldie?
Hello.
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 Is this
Hello?
Goldie?
It is.
Is this? Hi, how are you? Welcome to Our Common Ground.
Hi, BJ, how are you?
Good, thank you. Thank
you
so much. For being with me and Alpha, my co-host.
Thanks for having me.
We have been talking with Dr. Ray Wimbush tonight, and all of us, parents, community activists, grandparents, we're all concerned about the residual of these allegations, how it affects our community, how it affects our ability to secure the kinds of resources that we need for our children in safety and with confidence. And one of the things that you said in your blog, A Not-So-Superhero, The Rise and Fall of Eddie Long, was that you had been in church your whole life,
mm-hmm.
and finding the right church home was very important, and that you found in this situation that prosperity had paid significant dividends for the community that it served, and as well as for Reverend Long.
Sure.
Tell us your thoughts, your impressions when CNN broke this news?
Well, I think that my immediate response was shock, simply put, primarily because my family lives in that community. I still own a home there, the home that my mother and aunt live in. My sister owns a home in the community. My niece, nephew, their children, and a flurry of cousins still live there. And so we've all been through new birth at one time or another before settling into our own home churches. And so this touched us very close to home. You can't go very far across Atlanta without knowing someone who has been touched by this congregation, you know, and have their, had their lives improved, I think, as a matter of fact, by being involved in this congregation because of the kinds of things that, as a group, they promote. And so it was shock. It was saddening. And I needed to take, I think, a few days. I'm a little trigger-happy on blogging, but I needed to take a few extra days before I wrote anything. Because I needed to get my head around the very idea that someone in such a position, with such resources, could, you know, harm our children in any way, you know, and the regard in which he was held in many quarters,
mm-hmm.
I'll say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was my initial response. And as I said, I was in New York with other family during that time. And I think I waited 3 or 4 days before I posted about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have been, you're on record as having been a single parent all of your adult life.
Sure.
When you think about your children and you think about how this shakes everyone's confidence about bringing resources in churches and communities into families and into the lives of boys, what are your impressions about how this is going to affect that? What are the issues for single mothers in that church that relied upon this assistance?
Here's what I hope will happen, and we don't know today what the facts surrounding the case truly are until they're appropriately adjudicated. I think we've got to, we all have to kind of take a step back. It's hard to put my own personal beliefs aside, but I try daily.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of how it impacts this congregation, I know single mothers who are members of this congregation and who trust this church with the care of their children and for their education. That their lives truly revolve around it, whether it's a Wednesday night service or a Sunday morning service or a Sunday school or an elementary school education. And so they really rely on new birth, you know, as a cornerstone in their lives. And I know what it's like to have such a personal relationship with your church. I have one with my own. My church happens to be the second largest congregation of all congregations in the country. But we do things a little differently at my church, and I try not to truly compare them. But when I looked at this situation and had it happen in my own church, the level of devastation, the shaking of faith, was something that I could not turn loose. I thought that these and new birth, by the way, has more men involved there than almost any other African-American church across the country. The number of black men who are in attendance is way over the typical level that you might find in terms of, you know, ongoing engagement. And so that was something that has been applauded over the years. So it isn't just the mothers. It's the men who put their faith in this church as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a deep amount of empathy for those who are members, who are among this church family, who are struggling with the idea that their spiritual leader, someone who they've held in such high regard, that they have, you know, tried to model their lives after for all practical purposes, that he would, you know, allegedly conduct acts on children. It's just beyond me. It's beyond how I don't know how I would feel. I think I would have a flash of anger for it. I'd have a flash of resentment for it. But I guess if I were a member of New Birth, I'd want to know the truth, whatever it was.
You know, go ahead, Alpo.
Ms. Taylor, when you speak of whether or not these charges are true or false, isn't it an unspoken responsibility for Pastor Long to have impeccable integrity and to be above reproach? And just by
the fact that these
allegations have come up,
right,
always his entire scenario, his entire name.
Let me be very frank with you. I believe the boys.
I do too. There's no question in my mind.
I believe the boys. I have my sons know the boys. One of them went to college with one of the young men. I believe the young men. Now, as for, you know, Goldie's word, however, is not the final one here. You know, there will be a fact finding, but you know, the Bible tells us that a reverend, a bishop, a pastor, an evangelist has a higher sense of accountability, higher standard of accountability than do the rest of us. He is the shepherd of that flock. He has been given stewardship over 25,000 people, and that means he has a responsibility to them, a greater responsibility than they have to him. And so at the end of the day, when allegations like these arise, true or not, it's time for a sit-down, as we would call it in my home church.
It's time for a come-to-Jesus moment.
A come-to-Jesus moment. It is time that he say, you know, I need to turn over the reins to this church to protect it, because New Birth is much bigger than Eddie Long, and I understand that the bylaw says that he has full control over it. But at the end of the day, the church belongs to God. And if he is interested in protecting it, protecting its legacy, protecting, you know, the contributions that it can continue to make to DeKalb County and to all of Metro Atlanta and really for cities around the world, because he's seen almost everywhere. If he's interested in protecting that legacy, then I think a temporary step down is certainly in order until the fact-finding is complete.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the church itself owes itself an independent investigation. So I don't think it's just law enforcement's duty to investigate. I believe much of the investigation also belongs to New Birth. They should be about bringing this out.
Do you think that we haven't heard from the people in the church, that we haven't heard from the mothers of the complainants? Because people really are very silently thinking, how did I have a hand in this?
No, I think that we haven't heard from them out of direction from B.J. Bernstein. I think that when they caught the boys sort of off guard, the reporters did, and got them to talk, that was done without the direction of the attorney, the plaintiff's attorney.
I did read that.
And so I think we're not hearing from the families, because they do really want to respect the process.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that they went to the leadership of New Birth and Bishop Long prior to any lawsuits being filed and wanting to really sit down with him and get him to, you know, really admit what he's done, that there was no money offer or asking or anything else, that, you know, please stop hurting us and stop hurting young boys, and that, that he balked. And that's just what I understand, what I'm understanding that happened out there. I don't know for sure. But at the end of the day, he does have a responsibility to that congregation. And, again, it is greater than any responsibility that they have to him.
Mm-hmm. Goldie, would you mind taking some calls with us?
Sure.
Okay. You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham, and Alpha of the Alpha Show is my co-host tonight, and we're talking with Goldie Taylor. She is an author, a blogger, and Most prominently, she is the CEO of Goldie Taylor Brand Communications, and I think that many, many people and individuals coming out of who have been involved in this these situations at the New Birth Church are going to need some branding real bad. 201, you're on the air. I respect you, Hotep.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you for being with us tonight. You're talking with Alpha and Goldie Taylor at Our Common Ground.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on with you tonight. I've enjoyed listening to the show. First, I want to say what I guess a lot of us want to say is that when you hear the voice of this young man who's come forward in this latest interview, the pain in his voice is unmistakable. And it is obvious that something traumatic has happened in the life of this boy. And I have to believe that what he's saying is true. I do believe in what he's saying is true. I do believe in what your audience is saying and what some of the speakers have said tonight is that all hands on deck are needed in Atlanta. That this whole church needs some kind of intervention. I watched the interview. I heard Bishop Long, and his whole tone was, "I am not a perfect man." That sounds like a concession.
Well, he didn't really even say that. He said, "I have not presented myself as a perfect man." And that was a parsed word, the presented myself.
Again, these are words that greatly disturbed me. And I want to say I again believe that people are innocent until proven guilty. I believe every person is innocent until proven guilty. But so much of what's come out is very, very disturbing. And the language he used in his Sunday speech was very disturbing. And hearing this young man and the pain in his voice, it rings true to me.
Well, it actually had me weeping.
To me.
Let's get a response from Goldie Taylor and Alpha.
Well, I will tell you this, that I work with Fortune 500 CEOs and celebrity personalities on a daily basis and am often called to help craft crisis communications. What I heard from him in that pulpit was something that I would have crafted.
Absolutely.
I was protecting someone who was going to court on civil or criminal charges. And so it was probably as inauthentic as anything we PR folks could have come up with. And so that was disturbing to me. But what was more disturbing to me, that as bishop or pastor of such a large congregation, that he did not first step into that pulpit and offer prayer for everyone involved, that God cover everyone involved. The boys, if they're not telling the truth, they certainly need prayer. If they are telling the truth, heaven knows they do. And so I just think that probably his most egregious error was that he did not step forward first and offer prayer with every party impacted.
Can I say one more thing, please?
Sure.
Yes.
I want to say a pastor's job is to love his congregation and love his parish, and love is a verb. And out of love and respect for these boys, he should at the very least step down from his post to honor these boys. Love is a verb. If you love that congregation, step down and wait for due diligence to take place.
Yeah,
I think someone must have told him that to step down was an admission of guilt. And that's an unfortunate piece of advice to be given or to be accepted. He has a senior pastor who could, Bernice King, who is probably as equipped as any other pastor I know, who could have taken the reins at a moment's notice while this issue was worked out and adjudicated.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
thank you, 201, for your call. Mm-hmm. Alpha, you had a comment?
Well, as it was said, that there were 4 to 5 other adults who knew of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems, I think what I was taken aback, but I expected it. So I really can't say I was taken aback, was the way his congregation closed ranks around him. And just the mere just the mere dismissiveness of the charges of, you know, of the outrageous charges. Because guilty or not, that raises eyebrows, and they simply close ranks around him like, you know, like just
Well, you know, Alpha, we all closed ranks around that crazy Uncle Willie we had, didn't we?
No.
We had
Uncle Willie out in the street.
But we
Uncle
have
Willie
a
come
habit.
Up this dirty like this. Uncle Willie got
No, actually he didn't. Always. We have a habit in our community of circling the wagons around even the guilty among us when we are attacked.
To keep our secrets.
We keep our dirty laundry off the street.
Man,
we might have thrown Uncle Willie out, but we didn't turn him into the police.
Yeah, but these churches are full of people with that lifestyle. And instead of them not, you know, just instead of them, they're hypocrites. And
yeah.
I say they're hypocrites because you can go to, I don't care, and rather than them addressing, you know, their bigotry or their denial, they'll launch this whisper campaign.
But
you
you're also sitting and you're talking about a ministry that really has systematically and consistently manipulated people who simply had no other power beyond the manipulation. Let's go to 248. With Goldie Taylor, you're on the air with at Our Common Ground. I respect you. What are your comments, please? And thank you for holding so long. 248, are you there?
That's Navazo. I think she was just listening on on her phone because from what I gathered, she wasn't feeling well.
845, you're on the air. I respect you with Goldie Taylor and Alpha.
Hi, good evening. This is Denise Bold.
Denise
Bold, she's our resource person for the evening. She's an MSW parent educator and author of Raising Princes to Be Kings, A Single Black Mother's Guide to Raising Her Black Son. Thank you so much, Denise, for joining in the conversation.
Yes, thank you for letting me be on. This is a very powerful and much-needed discussion.
Well, thank you, Denise. Denise, I am particularly concerned about black mothers. Black mothers face a daunting task in raising boys, especially. We have so many of the skills and knowledge as a mother to offer onto our daughters, but the complexity of bringing a boy to manhood alone is daunting. Talk to us about that. Raise some of the questions that you always so interestingly raise about black boys.
Well, my paradigm and my foundation of black motherhood that's all throughout my book is one of empowerment. So I never say that the black mother is alone. She has many resources that's helping her raise her child. And I think what we need to understand is there is a difference between how a black mother raises her child and how a white mother raises her child based on the feedback and the environment that the community gives each of these moms. And for the black mother, she's constantly told that she cannot raise a son to be a man. She's told that her son is going to be effeminate. He's going to be at a deficit because he didn't have a father in the home. She's being given a huge, huge detriment of negative support, if you want to say. If I had a dollar for every time a black man came to my face and said to me, there needs to be a man in your home helping you raise that son, and your home is not complete until you have a black man in there helping you, I'd be sitting next to Bill Gates by now. So when you have society, your own people telling you, you can't do this, then you adapt to a sense of helplessness and you try to reach out to those who they're telling you to reach out to. And the church is one of them. And the other side of that is for single moms, the church gives you a sense of belonging, because if there's three questions I hear as a black woman is, are you married, where you're from, and what church do you belong to?
Mm-hmm.
And as Dr.
Mm-hmm.
Winbush alluded to early in the discussion, many, many blacks are closed off from their very own people because they don't belong to a church environment. And many untapped, very good resources go unused because of that. So when you have this constant deficit, the son goes off to school as a single black child, and he is put in a program, the banana split or party of one, because the schools are trying to address the fact that this is a single-parent home kid. Let's give him support, when actually what it is, it's a label that says there's a deficit in your life. So the
let's get a response to that.
Around saying, we've got a deficit, we've got to fill it up. And that's why things like this puts black single moms and their sons at a point of vulnerability.
Let's get a response from Goldie on that. Goldie, how do you feel about that? I think that is a perspective, a very important
I think it's a valid perspective. My experience was a different one. I come from a family of women. And when I say that, the oldest man in our family was born in 1986. That makes him, 24 years old? I guess that's 24, if I can add here. He's my nephew, the oldest man. There are no grandfathers, no fathers, no uncles, none of that. My son, Joshua, is the second oldest man in the family. Joshua's 19.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a family with women, we were raised to understand that it was our job to do it all and to get the resources from wherever they were available. And so, whether or not there was a man present in our home or not, we had a job to do, and that was raising boys and girls to be strong men and women. And so that was our job. At the end of the day, this is a very specific conversation about raising black boys and can you raise them to be strong men, but I would submit that young girls are as the idea of them not having strong men in their lives is almost cataclysmic in terms of its outcomes. I've seen that play out in our own families from early childbearing and all these other kinds of issues that come along with it, being in destructive relationships. And so, tonight my conversation is about all five, of mine, two stepchildren, three children. And I think, for them, it meant that I would have to rely on a variety of resources, whether it was my mother and sister or whether it was a pastor or church or a school family, that I had to cobble together my own village. Because today, and I think we heard the last caller talk about, it taking a village. The village doesn't exist anymore. The village as we do it is not there. Mrs. Johnson doesn't live up the street and watch your children, as they play outside, because our children, frankly, aren't playing outside anymore. And so the village really doesn't exist today. You have to cobble together your own, if you sort of understand, the necessity for it. But in this Facebook kind of world for our children, we can say all day about back in the day, the rules are different today. The questions are different today. And so as we equip our children for, this world, we've got to get out in it and really understand what kind of landscape they're playing in. There have been Bishop Longs in our community from the beginning of time. But having
I absolutely agree with you.
I could name a few tonight, but we want to protect the innocent and the guilty because they're not with us anymore.
Denise, thank you so much for your call. I knew that you would bring us and raise some very important issues. We've got other callers on the queue, and I want to try to get to as many calls as I can tonight.
Sure, no problem.
I don't know if you want me to stay on
or if you want me to hang up and give someone else a chance, but whatever you want to do is fine.
What I'm going to do is mute you and go to another caller.
Okay.
And come back to you.
248, you're on the air at Our Common Ground with Goldie Taylor and Alpha and Denise Bowles. Thank you for calling. I respect you. What's your comment? 248.
That's Navajo again.
Whoa. 201, area code 201, you're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for your call.
Well, I just want to comment on what Denise said. Certainly she is a fabulous author and a mentor to so many moms. She's right. The information that these women get, especially in church, is to turn over their sons to any kind of male presence in order to validate what's going on in society or whatever the image is. And that is, unfortunately, the method that makes them become predators. It makes them become targets for the predator. And so we have to begin to identify mommy mentors, and I am really lucky that I have some wonderful mommy mentors in my life that look at the success of their own sons and their own children, and I turn to them and I say, what should I do in this circumstance, in this situation? And so my advice to women is identify positive male role models, but also identify strong mommy mentors who can help you guide your son through this path. This path from boyhood to manhood.
Sure. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, 201. We enjoy always hearing your comments, and you're absolutely right. Mommy mentoring is very important. But, Goldie, you made a very significant point, and that is how we begin to be the architects of the villages that feed our children.
You know, I think that, you know, just as we choose, you know, what media we're going to have in our lives every day, and we choose Facebook, we choose NBC Today Show, we choose this nighttime show, we choose what we take in every day, we also have to be just as choiceful about what people we allow into our lives, what people we allow into our children's space. You know, when we chose play dates coming up when my kids were in elementary school here in Atlanta, I knew the parents. I saw the parents on a daily basis, and their children were at my home as frequently as my children were at theirs. And so it really was about putting together a solution that was right for us. Now, a church may not be a part of everybody's equation. It was certainly a part of ours, but you have to make your own equation that's right for you and right for your children. And so what I don't believe, however, is that boys who happen to grow up in women-led households turn out to be in any way, you know, have a greater propensity to be effeminate or any of those other kinds of things. That I don't believe.
Yes.
You know,
I think that we need serious discussion and conversation about that, because I believe that you are unique in understanding that.
I think, you know, my boys were raised in a single-parent home. Mine, neither. Of them can be characterized, you know, really in that way. Maybe it's because they had a Marine for a mom. I'm not sure. But I think that, you know, it's not a foregone conclusion. But what is, you know, what's more important of a topic here, I don't know if it's that a single mother had a child who was put in the, you know, who was at risk, so much as it was a predator who was able to identify. You know, the equation really works the other way. You know, people like that don't choose strong children. They don't choose children that they can't manipulate easily. They don't choose children who are going to go run and tell somebody or who
and
are going to strike back.
And that is what manhood training is about. Manhood training is not to make a male child macho. Manhood training is to give them basic foundations for how to be a good, healthy, strong human being.
Yeah, and we've got to teach our children what the appropriate parameters, what the appropriate boundaries are. My children, I am sure, were certain of those, where those boundaries lay, and were able to push people off when they stepped onto those lines. And so,
one of the things, and Denise and Alpha, you can jump in, at any point, but one of the things that struck me when I read about the Longfellow Academy was that it was about bodybuilding, it was about bling, and they all got jewelry, and it was about pumping up, and you know, and this whole macho thing that had undergirds of homophobia in it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'm
you have to remember, those who are very
parents,
hyper-vigilant against a certain group are the ones who are the most weakest to be having a propensity towards doing what that group is doing. So,
right.
So, yes, that is exactly what you're seeing there. But because society puts such a strong grip on that single mom and her son of what they should be doing, it's like someone's got them by the back of the collar, lifting them 6 feet off the ground, saying, this is what you have to do. That after a while, common sense, the vision, after a while, judgment gets clouded because human nature dictates that we want to belong somewhere. We want to be accepted somewhere. We want to have those success stories. And this case is a textbook case of a predator behavior. The environment, the predator himself, whom he's actually targeting, this man did not do this by himself. He had a group of people enabling his behavior in his environment that he has created.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
One of the things that I question, and I really have to throw this out there, and our number is 347-838-9852 if you'd like to join Goldie Taylor, and whose books, by the way, Goldie, I ordered your books this week. They came in yesterday, and I already read In My Father's House, and I'm working on January. Off and on all day between making doing radio production. But one of the things that strikes me, if I belong to a church, and believe me, I'm five generations AME. Well, I came from five generations AME. Mm-hmm. And one of my sheroes used to be, or still is, Jerina Lee, who was the first female bishop of the AME church. But she had to disguise herself as a man in order to be ordained.
Yes.
But one of the things, I couldn't be a member of a church with a pastor or any organization or any deacon board or any governance that wrapped itself around homophobia.
Right.
I just couldn't be there.
Right. You know, I think that one of the things, and, you know, my godbrother is a pastor out of Chicago. His name is Patrick Schaefer at City of Faith Church on Chicago's South Side. And one of the things that he teaches so much about is how that homophobia has caused a deafening silence in our community and caused so many other pathologies to take root and spring up, you know, such as HIV and AIDS or teen sexuality. You know, our inability to speak openly about these things have caused us much more harm than any benefit that we believe it might have given to us. And
I
so,
agree.
You
know, I mean, the black church and its homophobic attitude has basically helped kill many blacks because they did not incorporate HIV/AIDS training, awareness, or education for 20 years. They just started doing it now. And to talk to the congregation about a very prevalent phenomenon that's happening within a culture such as the black race, the black church was completely silent about it, and everything was very hush-hush, and you couldn't dare say anything about HIV or AIDS in a church. You were not allowed to do that.
Absolutely.
So, you know, these,
churches
systematically really can be a deterrent because they're getting away, as it was discussed early in the show, they're getting away from the spirituality and they're focusing on the business. And it's very patriarchal in its attitude, and it's very, very controlling in its attitude, and it really, really does a detriment to the black community if it's mishandled, such as what we're seeing now.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, Denise, before we take a break, I'd like for you to tell people where they can find you on Blog Talk Radio, because you are talking these issues with the core for black single mothers every week.
And
yes,
really
my name is Denise Bowles, and I'm a medical social worker, parent advocate, and educator, and my book is Raising Princes to Be Kings, A Single Black Mother's Guide to Raising Her Black Son. My show is on Blog Talk Radio. I have over 11,000 listeners, and my show is Black Motherhood Empowerment. And just last week, we did a show, Evangeline Biddy and I did a show about what parents can look for predator behavior around their black sons because
mm-hmm.
of the
mm-hmm.
silence of the macho, of the, you know, the whole stigma with society. So my shows are geared around everything around the black mother and her son on a way of empowerment, everything from hair to discipline to education, the judicial system, as well as community resources. So that's the whole gist of my show.
And I have posted, for those of you who are chatting in our chat room, I've posted a link for Denise Bowles. Denise, thank you so very much. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Goldie Taylor of the Goldie Taylor Project.
I need those hits! Hit me!
Our Common Ground. Talk that matters. I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you.
When there's a fire, you call 911. If there's suspicious activity outside, you call 911. But when there's domestic violence, very few people call 911. And that's a crime. Domestic violence is a crime.
Help is available. If you or someone you know is in immediate danger, make the call. Report the crime. Get some help. Call 911 for domestic violence.
You know that the ice cream scoop can make a child smile, and that by slowing us down, the traffic light can keep us going. You know that the lawnmower makes life easier, that the blood bank makes life possible. But did you know all these ideas came from the minds of African Americans? Support the United Negro College Fund, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Hi out there, this is Janice Graham of Our Common Ground. Want to remind you of some of the terrific broadcast shows available to all you talkers. The India Declare Show, Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. and Saturday at 11 a.m. The Alpha Show, every Saturday, 3 p.m. And following that 3 p.m. broadcast, he's at TruthWorks Network at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And don't forget of all the audio documentary being provided at TruthWorks Network here at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham, and I'm sure me and my friends will be listening for you.
And thank you for being with us here at Our Common Ground. Our guest in the segment is Goldie Taylor of the Goldie Taylor Project, and she is the author of something that you need to read if this is of interest to you, understanding all of the issues having to do with the impact of the rise and fall of Eddie Long. It is entitled A Not-So-Superhero, The Rise and Fall of Eddie Long. And I also want to say to you that I have been become a Goldie Taylor fan. And if you would like to join me in that, she is an author. And I have been reading her wonderful, wonderful book, Father in My House. What? Help me.
In my father's house.
In My Father's House. I read it on yesterday. I got the book in the mail, and I went right to it. And you really can become a Goldie Taylor fan as well. And we hope that you will check out her bio that we provided. I am reading now The January Girl, which was published in 2007. And thank you so much for these wonderful books and the wonderful blog, Goldie, in regard to this Eddie Long situation to help us. People are trying to sort this out.
Right.
Because it's so important. It has to do with our church institution, which is a fundamental foundation of our culture as a people. As I always say, it has been the church and the expositors, the people who have chosen to go against the odds, that have been the bridges that have brought us safely across. Now, before we went on break, Goldie, one of the things that I want you to talk about particularly is how the Atlanta community is responding to this. I mean, is the local government concerned about whether or not there's sexual abuse of children going on in this major institution? It's been very quiet.
We are a peculiar city. I have been involved in Atlanta politics in one form or fashion for the last 20 years. I've known every mayor in those 20 years, every congressman of the state in those 20 years, every governor we've had. And I have to tell you that I'm not surprised by the silence. We are a protected class, Atlanta's business and political community. We are the kind who, you know, I think Billy McKinney used to say, no permanent friends, no permanent enemies, only permanent issues. That meant that you don't say an ill word about your brother, no matter what wrong he has done, until the courts have their say, because you never know when you might need him again for something else. You have to realize that Eddie Long, you know, charges or not, remains a very powerful man in the state.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So
yeah.
Come out publicly as a public official and say something about this issue would take nothing short than an act of courage in this town. And so, you know, and so you won't be hearing from, you know, our state legislators and our mayors and our Congress people. You won't be hearing from them.
Well, you have one particularly brave minister, Reverend Dennis Walton.
Yes, yes.
Who not only came out, and I don't mean out of the closet.
Sure.
He spoke against Reverend Long, and I was very surprised by that.
I was very surprised, but, you know, we have hundreds of African-American ministers in this city, and, you know, silence is a very strong action in and of itself. If we won't stand up for our children, who will? Who can we ask to stand for them if we won't? If we won't speak for them, who can we ask to speak for them? You know, that the silence is deafening to me. It is as bothersome as anything I've ever encountered. To me, it is you know, you expect, you know, Bishop Long to deny charges, and, you know, because he's accused, but, you know, when you talk about our business leaders and political class in this town and the silence that they have to live it upon this, you know, that is nothing short of a lack of leadership. Nothing short. They'll hide behind, we're waiting for the facts to come out. But then you talk to them privately and they'll tell you how they feel all day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a problem there.
Well, Ms. Taylor, you mentioned that it would take nothing less than an act of courage. And I think that speaks volumes of exactly what this entire premise of religion and what it does to a people when, you know, you have so many willing to follow blindly and dismiss facts. And when I say dismiss facts, I simply mean the facts that are there before them, the homophobia that occurs before their very eyes in the silence.
Sure. you know, it is a conspiracy of silence, and it's the same thing that sort of drives the no snitching culture in our community. Something that has devastated us for many, many years. And so if we won't turn the young boy next door in for shooting another, are we going to turn in the preacher for bothering these children? I just think that when I say take nothing less than an act of courage, let me be more frank. There isn't a courageous being in Atlanta's political class. Not one. And I know them
all. And that has a lot to do with the hype of Atlanta being the black mega, the Atlanta being the center of black celebrity and wealth.
You know,
and I'm
I
not
think
just, well, go ahead.
There's a bit of a sideshow happening there, yes. I live in multiple cities, and Atlanta is not alone in this by any measure, but certainly the way that it sort of holds itself out to be this mecca for African-American influence, this mecca for a place that, you know, you can come and grow your quality of life, grow your personal wealth. You know, you can be anything in this city. We hold ourselves out that way. We hold ourselves out to be, you know, the people of power, the people of courage. And I'm not sure a lot of that is true.
Well, we've only got a few minutes before we have to say goodbye to everyone, and we really thank you so much, Goldie Taylor, for joining us tonight. You've brought a great deal of insight to this, a great deal of common black wisdom. And I think that it really does help me to think about that there are people who have an awareness on this issue, and that we're not totally lost about these things, and that one of the things that we have to do is we have to break the secret, and we have to call out the leadership, and we have to call out people when they're wrong, and we have to still call them our brothers and sisters, but we have to call them our wrong brothers and sisters.
Right.
And thank you so much for taking the time, and I am so enjoying your book that I'm going to invite you to join us on our collaborative network where we do book reviews to talk about In My Father's House. I loved the characters.
Well, I appreciate that.
A lot of the themes there
are playing out here, I imagine, with absent fathers.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much, and we look forward to you being a very active and visible member of the Our Common Ground family.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Wow. You see, Alpha, it comes together after a while. That was Goldie Taylor. And for those of you who have not read it, I'm going to post it again in our chat room. But for those of you who are just listening, you can Google the Goldie Taylor Project and learn a lot more about Goldie Taylor and to read what she has written, A Not-So-Superhero, The Rise and Fall of Eddie Long. Alpha, we've had a lot of stuff going tonight. It's moved really fast, and I thank you once again for being with us. And for those of you, 610-345-248 that we didn't get to, we invite you to come back next Saturday night at Our Common Ground and be with us and be heard to raise your voice on issues that are important to our community. Alpha, you want to say good night? We've only got 90 seconds.
Good night.
You got to go. You missed
good
your point.
Good night to everyone. Thanks,
I
everyone.
I love you, Alpha. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for being with us here at Our Common Ground tonight. I'm Janice Graham. Next Saturday night at 10 p.m., we'll be here at Our Common Ground, speaking truth to power and ourselves. My thanks to the contributions made by our guests, Dr. Raymond Winbush and Goldie Taylor. Thank you so much. We look forward to having you back at Our Common Ground again. And a special thanks to our listeners, our chatters, and for those of you who have called. Don't forget to tune in to our other broadcast products at TruthWorks Network. I'll be listening for you.